Jaya Radha Madhava Kanja Vihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kanja Vihari Vijana Vallabha Girivara Bhari Jaya Gopijana Vallabha Girivara Bhari Jaya Radha Madhava Kanja Vihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kanja Vihari Gopijana Vallabha Girivara Bhari Jaya Gopijana Vallabha Girivara Bhari Yashodanandana Bhajana Ranjana Yashodanandana Bhajana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kanja Vihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kanja Vihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kanja Vihari Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parivrayakacharya Stacharasata Sri Simad His Divine Grace Hila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki His Confounded Acharya His Divine Grace Hila Prabhupada Ki Gantarashi Madhavatam Ki Gaura Pramanandi All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devin Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jaya Mudhirayet Nastaprayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th Canto, Chapter 7. It's entitled The Killings of the Demon Trinavarta, Texts 5 and 6. We're going to recite both of them. Nandasya Padmikrita Majanadikam. Piprakrita Svachayanam Supujitai. Viprakrita Svachayanam Supujitai. You can't follow the meter of.
Go.
Okay, so what will that be? Nandasya Patnikrita Majanadikam. Go ahead. Viprakrita Svasyayanam Supujitai. Anadya Savasya Grifi. Translation: after completing the bathing ceremony for the child, Mother Yashoda received the brahmanas by worshipping them with proper respect and giving them ample food grains and other eatables, clothing, desirable cows, and garlands. The brahmanas properly chanted Vedic hymns to observe the auspicious ceremony, and when they finished, and Mother Yashoda saw that the child felt sleepy, she lay down on the bed with the child until he was peacefully asleep. Purport: an affectionate mother takes great care of her child and is always anxious to see that the child is not disturbed even for a moment. As long as the child wants to remain with the mother stays with the child and the child feels very comfortable. Mother Yashoda saw that her child felt sleepy, and to give him all facilities for sleep, she lay down with the child, and when he was peaceful, she got up to attend the other household affairs. Number 6. What is the meter again? Otani kautsukya manamanasvini samagartam pujayita vajokasaha. My Vasino Dvai Ruditan Sutasya Sa. Rudam Samarti Charana Budakshipat. Translation: the liberal Mother Yashoda, absorbed in celebrating the Uttana ceremony, was busy receiving guests, worshipping them with all respect, and offering them clothing, cows, garlands, and grains. Thus, she could not hear the child crying for his mother. At that time, the child Krishna, demanding to drink the milk of his mother's breast, angrily threw his legs upward. Purport: Krishna had been placed underneath a household handcart, but this handcart was actually another form of Shukatasura, a demon who had come there to kill the child. Now, on the plea of demanding to suck his mother's breast, Krishna took this opportunity to kill the demon. Thus, he kicked Shakatasura just to expose him. Although Krishna's mother was engaged in receiving guests, Lord Krishna wanted to draw her attention by killing the Shakatasura, and therefore he kicked the cart-shaped demon. Such are the pastimes of Krishna. Krishna wanted to draw the attention of his mother, but while doing so, he created a great havoc, not understandable by ordinary persons. These narrations are wonderfully enjoyable, and those who are fortunate are struck with wonder upon hearing the extraordinary activities of the Lord. Although the less intelligent regard them as mythological because a dull brain cannot understand them, they are real facts. These narrations are actually so enjoyable and enlightening that Maharaj Pariksit and Sukadeva Goswami took pleasure in them, and other liberated persons following in their footsteps become fully jubilant by hearing about the wonderful activities of the Lord. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Shakshuru Militanjena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. So this, thank you for putting that in there. So this is the continuation of how baby Krishna is handling different demons. One remarkable thing here is that the inhabitants of Vrindavan were so much absorbed in reciprocating with Krishna, in his dealings with Krishna, that they actually could not see the supreme status of Krishna. They just love Krishna. And this is why when these events took place, when all these demons were creating so much disturbance, they could not figure it out. Prabhupada even addressed them as simple-minded villagers. But we know from the acharyas that these devotees, these inhabitants of Vrindavan, they had to be greatly advanced personalities to have been born in Vrindavan. Not only to have been born in Vrindavan, but also to have a direct relationship with Krishna, because there are other living beings in Vrindavan, animals who also actually have a relationship with Krishna, Shanta Ras. But in the human form, the relationship with Krishna are more meaningful, more tasty, more personal than when somebody is born in an animal form, or a plant, or a tree, or a leaf, or whatever. So because there is more display of consciousness, so that relationship between the Lord and his devotees is becoming even more endearing. And yet, somehow or other, they could not see the position of Krishna. And that's why they're always struck with wonder whenever the things were happening. One thing is here that how Mother Yashoda display all these affections, all these motherly feelings and emotions for Krishna. And the interesting point of that, Krishna being in the heart of all living beings, Krishna is also in the hearts of his pure devotees. So Krishna can relate to these feelings, these motherly feelings, these vatsalya feelings, parental affection, parental love. So not only Krishna is receiving the love from the pure devotees, but also Krishna is witnessing the emotions within the hearts of the devotees. So Krishna is enjoying twice the loving exchanges. That's what he said here, that Maharaja Shola, when she saw that Krishna was falling asleep, she made all arrangements, like any mother would do, all arrangements to make Krishna comfortable so that he could fall asleep properly. Now the interesting point also is that Prabhupada explains in the purport, in the second purport to this verse number 7, is that somehow or other Prabhupada explains that these things are not mythological. Why would Prabhupada come up with this thought when he's already writing purpose to the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam? Why wouldn't he say this in the first canto, when all these far out stories are being displayed of, you know, human beings with a head of a horse, or in the second canto with a human being with a head of a lion? You know what I mean? So why, It's interesting that Prabhupada brings the Asian mythology when Krishna just appeared like a child. So, I was thinking about this when I assigned myself this verse. And the point is that, as Prabhupada explains, in order to be able to understand not only the position of Krishna and the position of the pure devotees, not only to be able to understand the different incarnations of Krishna, one cannot do so without proper training, without proper state of consciousness. In the earlier verses in this chapter 7, Srila Prabhupada explains that this is required, that we should attempt to understand Krishna in the association of devotees. It is not possible to understand Krishna without the input of other devotees, Krishna's devotees. It's not possible. I mean, even Lobramana said, Adaitama chuttanu nalina nantarupam agam purana purusho navajovanam cha vedesha dhullavam adhullavam atmabhakto govindam adipurusham tamahum vajami. Lobramana has explained that even if one is able to master all the intricacies of Vedic knowledge, even if you're able to master all the intricacies of the language in which the Vedas are written, Sanskrit, and if you have got all the time to do so, still that's not a guarantee that you will be able to understand Govinda. So after having undergone, and not only that, but in order to even just be a participant in trying to understand Vedic text, Vedic philosophy, Vedic rituals, Vedic ceremonies, Vedic civilization, it just to get to that point, just to get to the point that you want to do that, it already requires a person to be in a very elevated state of mind, just to have the desire to do that. This is why the acharyas, this is why Srila Prabhupada over and over again emphasizes that this cannot be understood by mundane scholarship. You know, like nowadays we have, it's good actually, that nowadays in several universities in the world, people are having established, even the devotees are establishing faculties of Indology, or Hindu studies. But by someone undergoing an academic approach to Vedic understanding, the only thing you can come up with that is that this is mythology. And that's why Prabhupada explains it here. That's the only thing you can come up with. Because you begin to compare these activities of the Lord with other mythological accounts in other civilizations. The Greeks, the Romans, the Incas, the Mayans, the Aztecs, you name it. Everybody had their own stories going. If you look at, you just have a quick preview of the histories of different civilizations in the world, you would see that everybody had their own books or their own stories going, their own mythologies. So somebody who is not prepared to undergo the rigorous life of austerity, tapasya, one who is not able to submit himself or herself to the process of devotional service, one who is not willing to submit himself or herself to the shelter of a pure devotee, to the shelter of the sadhus, cannot understand Krishna. That's not possible. And this is why Prabhupada brings this up, even at this point in discussing the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. The two things are not mythological. Srila Prabhupada explains in his preface to this Bhagavatam that devotees who have undergone the time, the energy, who have put the energy, who have undergone the austerity to study the Srimad Bhagavatam for the first 9 cantos, if one is able to stick around, he's gone. no matter what, and you, from canto 1 all the way to canto 9, if you've done it properly, Prabhupada said, you're a self-realized soul. You're already a self-realized soul. When you enter into the 10th canto, it is assumed that you are already a self-realized soul. And yet, Prabhupada explained this in this verse, that to some people, this still may sound like mythology. So, what we have to understand is that the more you look at this pastimes of Krishna with his devotees, and even his pastimes with the demons, the more wonderful they are, actually. And this is that Srila Prabhupada used to tell us, that this Bhagavatam that we have on earth is just for us. There are other versions of the Bhagavatam which are meant for the demigods, for example, which the number of slokas is much larger than the Bhagavatam that we have, the 18,000 slokas. So Prabhupada said that even those activities that we cannot even conceive of, we don't have the brain to understand certain activities of Krishna. Not only that, but in the Nectar of Devotion it is said that we will never be able to actually understand Krishna 100%. Not even Narada Muni or devotees in his caliber can actually be able to understand Krishna that much. Only Krishna himself can understand himself at that level. So it is not wondering, it's not a surprise that, you know, Krishna is just doing this, kicking his little legs and killing a demon in the shape of a cart. This is not mythology. This is just one of Krishna's wonderful displays of his activities. Everything Krishna does, everything that Krishna is doing, is wonderful. And that's why he's so attractive. I remember when I first joined ISKCON, we were distributing books, and we were distributing a lot of Krishna books. And the Bhakta program devotee that I was under, we used to go on Harinams, and so when we used to pass out the Krishna books, you know, to the people, when people gathered around us, we used to get Krishna books, and then the people were so stricken by the pictures of Krishna, you know, with the cowherd boys and just playing, and just the impression that they had of this display of Krishna's activities, and used to buy the books. Later on, I noticed also that one of the things that actually brought me to ISKCON was the fact that reading the Krishna book for the first time, it kind of struck me, like, because we've been educated that God is an old man for so long. God is an old man, an angry God, or that God is, you know, keeping record. He's a bookkeeper, you know, doing all kind of record keeping for countless living entities, what they do, what they don't do, what good they do, what bad they do. So it was kind of when the Krishna book landed in my hands, it was like, wow, Krishna's having fun in the forest. And I used to play in the forest a lot. So I kind of related to it. When I was a kid, after school, with some of my friends, we just used to go, you know, and chase birds and chase frogs. Just what Krishna was doing, chasing frogs, chasing birds. And so it was kind of, I was relating to this very well when I first read Krishna book, and that was the second book. I could not understand Bhagavad Gita that well, because Bhagavad Gita was, you know, you have to have a brain to understand Bhagavad Gita. But the Krishna book, it was making so much impact. We were distributing all over the place. People were buying the Krishna book. And, of course, for the contaminated mind, they can also misunderstand Krishna. Because I remember one of our devotee sisters could not relate to ISKCON, because she said that Krishna was killing left and right all the time after she wrote a Krishna book. Why is this God so violent? Why is he killing all the time? killing demons. You know, she's the baby he's killing. All the way he's grown up, he's killing. So this is one way of understanding Krishna with an ordinary brain, because we want to bring God down to our own level. Because when we say Krishna is killing, we think that Krishna is killing the way we kill. When we kill, we feel guilt. But when Krishna kills, he doesn't feel guilt. Because Krishna is liberating the person who gets killed. Not only that, but Krishna and his devotees, they have their own rasas going. Some of these relationships we don't even know. Some of those relations we are told about, just like in the case of Jai and Vijay. They made a deal with Lord Vishnu. You know, when Jai and Vijay stopped the Kumaras from entering Vaikuntha, and they made a mistake, unknowingly made a mistake. So when the whole thing got cleared up, you know, Lord Vishnu said, you know, you have to pay for this. You stopped these Kumaras from entering, and somehow or other you got cursed, and now not even Lord Vishnu could have stopped that curse. He could have stopped it, but the Lord already had in mind these pastimes. And so he told them, I give you the option that you have the option of, you know, being born in the material world as my enemies, and we engage in this chivalrous activities of fighting with each other, and ultimately I'll kill you. That was the deal. So the devotees are going to these activities with the Lord. I mean, who knows? There's all these demons here that are getting killed. Trinavarta, Putana, all this one. I mean, they probably have an understanding with the Lord. I mean, Prabhupada said, it's very difficult to get to be directly associated with Krishna, even in an inimical mood. So there has to be some mysterious ways in which Krishna is dealing with these living entities. On the other hand, these are very instructing activities for us. Because remember, all these pastimes of the Lord are being enacted in this material world for the purpose of reclaiming us from the material world. So not only is Krishna enjoying all these pastimes, and not only the devotees are enjoying those pastimes, but also those devotees who are in the process of becoming Krishna conscious, they are there, these pastimes are there for them to understand what is the proper understanding of the status of the Lord and the status of the pure devotees. That's really the purpose for us, is to understand why these things are happening. And in that sense, we can actually embrace all these different stories, different activities of the Lord, and increase our own Krishna consciousness. Each and every page of the Srimad Bhagavatam, each and every page, each and every sloka, is meant for us to be absorbed and imbibed and try to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Or try our best to understand Krishna. And Krishna will see our sincerity. How are we endeavoring to understand the Lord? And Krishna will reveal himself. Like we recited in the beginning, Narayanam Namaskritya Narayan Chaiva Narottamam. Before reciting this Bhagavatam, which is the very means of conquest, we offer our obeisances to Lord Narayan. We offer our respects to Lord Narayan, to the supermost human being, Narayan Rishi, to Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, to Srila Vyasadeva, the author, and to Srila Prabhupada, the commentator. You see, there is that. We pay obeisances to everyone involved. Srila Vyasadeva wrote this great transcendental literature, Bhagavatam. And yet, we pay obeisances to everyone. Maya Saraswati, Supermost Human Being, Narayan Rishi, Lord Narayan himself. Because they all participate in our developing of Krishna consciousness. And we pay obeisances to the devotees who wrote these commentaries. And the crucial thing too is that Srila Prabhupada established in this society this Bhagavata discourses every single morning for the same purpose. When we actually speak of Krishna, we're not speaking for our own, from our own endeavors. Only Krishna can speak through his devotees. That's what it is. It is not a scholastic thing. It's not a memorization. It's not that you know so many slokas and you can quote them left and right. No, it is because Krishna is being manifested. Krishna manifests himself through the words of the devotees. And that's why Prabhupada established this program. So that this discourse of the Bhagavatam can, we increase our own Krishna consciousness. We are not here to just be able to recite stories for our own intellectual amusement, but actually to increase our love for Krishna. If our love for Krishna is increasing, if our attachment for Krishna is increasing, if our dedication and commitment to the mission of Srila Prabhupada is increasing, then we are sure that we are on the right path. Because Krishna cannot be understood without the involvement of his devotees. And in our case, Srila Prabhupada has mandated us, he gave us the mandate to discuss the things every day, to imbibe it every day, and to give it out every day. I mean, what else do we do? I mean, what else is there to do in this world? Think about it. I mean, we've been chewing the chewed for countless lifetimes. It is a very mysterious understanding. Because not many people can understand the things. Like yesterday, we were talking to a guest. We were talking with a guest in the Sunday Feast program. And he could not understand why is it that the devotees are so much into not having sex. So why you guys avoid that? He said, the other devotees could not explain it because it's like a second nature thing, you know. You're not chasing women like people are chasing women out in the material world. And why is that? Because there's already a higher taste. There is a higher perception of life, higher perception of one's existence. When one's existence is so polluted and it's so downgraded, of course, you know, one is going to be pivoting around what everybody's pivoting. Women, money, fame. And people think this is life. The more money I have, the more fame I have, and the more money I have, and the more fame I have, the more beautiful the women I'm going to get. That's everybody who's chasing after that. But when they see the devotees peacefully talking about their things that seems like a mythology, they get struck. How is it that these guys are doing this? And they're so peaceful with so little. They're so self-satisfied with so little. This is the test, actually, that one can say, wow, you know, this is working on, it's working with me. And that's what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita also. Krishna explains that one cannot give up the lower attachments unless one has a higher attachment. Because we as human beings, we are bound to have attachments. No living entity can exist in a meaningful way without some kind of attachment. But those attachments can be either materially motivated or spiritually motivated. And where our attachments are increasing in relationship to the Lord, then our life becomes more meaningful. You die in peace, you live in peace, you think in peace, everything is peaceful. In the material world, everybody is anxious. Prabhupada explains that the material world can be summarized in two things. People are hankering after what they don't have or lamenting for what they lost. Isn't it? I mean, I see this every day with my own folks, with my relatives, with friends, colleagues. People are lamenting for what they don't have, making plans for what they don't have, They're hankering after all kinds of things. And when they lose what they have, they lament. And that's it. They're from lamentation to hankering, from hankering to lamentation. And that's what is material life. All these relationships that are established on the platform of material consciousness will simply swing us from lamentation to hankering, from hankering to lamentation. There's nothing else to do. In the meantime, people create, they create distractions. But it's the same thing. It's just, they create movies, they have a whole entertainment industry for what? So that you forget your job, because you hate your job. Or you hate your work. Or, at the end of the day, you want to go and turn on the TV and watch something that's going to make you laugh, because nothing else is making you laugh. See, again, you have to create something else, hankering for what you don't have. But whereas the devotees who are self-satisfied, the devotees are Atmarama, just like Krishna is Atmarama. Because it is explained that the development of Krishna consciousness is simply the invoking of our dormant transcendental existence. And our transcendental existence is pivots around three things: eternality, knowledge, and bliss. Krishna is Sachidananda, and therefore the living entities, we are Sachidananda. And when we are cleansed from material contamination, this Sachidananda nature begins to display. And that's why when the devotees feel blissful, the devotees become knowledgeable, and devotees realize their own eternal existence. And this is why Krishna consciousness is so important in the world. Any comments or questions? Yes, Prabhu, is the mic there?
I'm not sure, I didn't hear you right, but did you say that, you said that Prabhupada brought up mythological in this purport, which we see, but I thought you said that he didn't bring it up previously in other cantos. You didn't say that.
No, what I said is that in the first canto, there are already stories that are, from the material point of view, quite mythological. And it is striking that Prabhupada said that by the end of the ninth canto, if you study properly, you're already a self-realized soul. Now Prabhupada's talking about the tenth canto, which is assumed that you're already a self, his audience, the readers, by the time you are reading the tenth canto, you're supposed to be a self-realized soul. And yet, Prabhupada still mentions, in this particular purport, that these are not mythological stories. This issue could have been addressed in the first canto.
Like people always get a first canto first.
Right, I understand that. So that's another point.
They may just get this book, like Krishna book.
Right.
As a matter of fact, the other day we read a purport where Prabhupada said, I was putting a plug in for just about five slokas ago for the Krishna book in his purports, that one should be the Krishna book. Here he is doing 10th canto, but he's telling us we should read Krishna book.
Right.
Like, is that he knew he wouldn't finish or
not? Right. Prabhu there?
Yeah, I missed everything except the mythological part of the class. But there's different definitions of the word mythological.
Right.
So, you can play with that also. This cultural reference worldview thing or from one extreme, some big intellectual idea of mythos to fairy tales. So, you could play.
Well, actually, if you go by the definition that scholars give about mythology, the stories of the Bible, one classical definition of mythology is that these stories cannot be traced backwards in time. One of the definitions is that, like for example, Greek mythology or Roman mythology, is that these stories, there is no founder, but they can't trace who came up with it. In other words,
Sanskrit word, Brahma Satya Jagan Mithya. Myth comes from the word Mithya, which means false.
Yeah, that's a good point. Whereas in the Bhagavatam, we can trace an author, we can trace a writer. So by the definition of the scholars, this is not mythology, because there is a writer. Prabhupada oftentimes said that how Vyasadeva, who's a great personality, just for writing so much stuff, how could he waste his time writing mythology? Prabhu, I'm going to write in here.
I was listening to the class in the room there, doing some service. 2 points is, your friend who mentioned, you know, why, how come Krishna kills so many demons? Actually, the original Krishna never kills any demons.
Right, that's a good point.
Only the Vasudeva form of Krishna kills the demons. So the original form of Krishna doesn't kill. The second point is that in Vrindavan, there's no Santa Ras.
Yeah.
Because Chaitanya Charitamrita mentioned so many, in so many places, because I listened especially to the first 7 chapters to get all the Siddhanta, and it always just mentions friendship, servitude, friendship, parenthood, and conjugal love. And even there's no pure servitude. The servitude is like Krishna's younger friends. It's mentioned in Nectar Devotion. They sometimes dress Krishna, and you know Krishna plays funny tricks and hits him on the head with flutes. So their friendship is mixed with servitude. So there's only really 3.5 rasas.
Right.
Sometimes it's they move. They're not stationary. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. There's no Santa. No, but the Chaitanya Charitamrita gives this evidence in so many different chapters. It didn't say there's no Santa Ras.
What it is...
I haven't read all the purports. I've only...
Anyway, what it is that in Vrindavan, the rasas are more pronounced, even though all the rasas exist, but the ones that are more pronounced are the affection in friendship, parental love, and conjugal love. That's understandable. Those are the most pronounced. In fact, those are the ones that are being displayed in this pastimes right now. Eventually, some of the purports, eventually some of the shlokas, they're going to be pointed to Santa Ras. But the majority of the shlokas, the majority of the narrations, the majority of the pastimes are related to friendship, vatsalya, and madhurya. We understand that.
The part where Krishna and Balaram are in the forest, and Krishna says to Balaram that these plants are bowing down to touch your feet. Also, there's, I don't know, I can't quote the exact verses, but there are verses in certain scriptures which describe how the plants and the creepers, when they see Krishna, they shiver in ecstasy and move. So
and all the rasas are there.
Yeah.
But the ones that we've been addressing the bottom, again, are mostly the rasas of friendship, parental love, and conjugal love. In that sense, we understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
The ladies, any comments from the ladies? These questions? All right. Thank you, Prabhu.
Sometimes I notice that, like, even the idea of mythology, it's to give people who don't want to love Krishna a place to put these pastimes, because what can you do with them? So it's also a little bit of a trick, because they read them, because without having to make the commitment, just for their entertainment value, but it still has its potency about it, and it gradually brings them around. So it's actually just a trick, you know. Oh, it's just mythology, you can read it.
Actually, it's Krishna covering himself. You see, to classify Krishna's activities as mythology is really the work of the Mayavadis. The Mayavadis' own purpose is to disrobe Krishna of his personal qualities. So what better way to do that than to say that these stories are made up? In reality, because Krishna is not the Supreme Lord. There is no such a thing as the Supreme Lord. There is no such a thing as the Supreme Personality of God. So it's all made up. It's all mythology. Even disgracefully, even the Indians are buying into that. See, if you go to India, I mean, India is like, it's like Prabhupada says, it's a hodgepodge of stories that, you know, not found anywhere. So just Krishna's pastime is just part of the mix. The Mayavadis have destroyed, the Mayavadis have vested interest in classifying Krishna's pastimes as mythology. They are the only ones. Yes, Prabhu?
A lot of these mundane scholars, and even Indian scholars also, tend to dismiss the Bhagavatam on the basis of the fifth canto. See, like when the geography of the earth was explained here, that seems mythological to them, especially with the vastness and, and you know, all these different oceans and stuff like that. So if you were to answer them, I mean, like... On that point, how would you convince them?
When you preach to them, you just, like Prabhupada said, just give them prasad. I mean, even us, I mean, when we came to Krishna consciousness, we're not born in Krishna consciousness. When we came to Krishna consciousness, I mean, we had no clue of those things. We had no... There has to be for people to buy into Krishna consciousness, people have to be moved. And that can only happen when a pure devotee is present. There's no other explanation. It's really a mysterious, it's really a mystery. It's really a mystery. It's really a mystical experience that people have to be in the presence of a devotee of Krishna so they can be touched and their souls can be steered into trying to understand who Krishna is. There's no other way. We are so polluted in this material world. We're so polluted, so degraded, so downgraded, that without the presence of a pure devotee, or the influence of a pure devotee, we cannot get back to Krishna. It's impossible. This world is made up that way. The forgetfulness of Krishna is so deeply rooted that even if this world, I mean, there are some instances like that, you can actually be in the presence of Krishna face to face and actually fail to see Krishna. Because that forgetfulness is so deeply rooted within the heart. I mean, look at these demons. I mean, these demons came in the presence of baby Krishna. That wonderful transcendental living entity is Krishna. God Himself, the supreme living entity,
in the form of a baby, which is so attractive. And yet these demons, these living entities, had that the intention was to kill him. So you can be face to face to Krishna in Krishna's most sublime manifestation, and yet have the intention of killing him. So that means that proximity to the Lord is not what is required in order to understand the Lord. In fact, we are next to each other in our hearts. Krishna is right there, next to each other. You're next to the soul for countless lifetimes. And yet we can't see him. We can't perceive him. So how is that happening? How is it? How can you explain that proximity, geographic proximity, is not an issue? It's just, it's a mystery. God has been with us for, since we left him at the transcendental world. He's been with us, wandering in different species of life, different kalpas, different universes, different manifestations, and yet we can't see him. So it's required the intervention of a pure devotee, as Lord Prabhupada explained in a few slokas back here. It requires the intervention of a pure devotee and to start waking up. That's what it is. There's no other explanation. So when you're preaching to the non-devotees, and they come up with this argument that these are all mythologies, all you gotta do is just give them some prasad and keep going with your life. There's nothing else to do. Any other comments from the Mataji's section? All right. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.